The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, March the 4th. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with Knoxville Raceway 305 Sprint Car Rookie of the Year candidate Andy Byerly, and we'll be joined by Greg Hodnett as he gets set for his first full season of racing with the Mike Heppner Racing Team. That's all coming up next here on the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by Coastal181.com, Reading for Racers, and by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway. Just in time for spring, motorsports publisher Coastal 181 will deliver another great open-wheel book titled The People's Champ, A Racing Life. This autobiography of USAC Triple Crown champion Dave Darlin looks at his racing career from quarter midgets to sprint cars. The People's Champ is sure to be a hit with open-wheel fans about one of the sport's true class acts. To learn more, visit Coastal181.com or call them toll-free at 877-907-8181. Coastal 181, Reading for Racers. And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. My next guest is an 18-year-old female driver who currently lives in Bismarck, North Dakota. While she's pursuing a degree in chemistry and might be a doctor one day, she is going to be taking on the ranks of the 305 Sprint Cars at the famed Knoxville Raceway this year, making the move up from the IMCA Modifieds. And we welcome in Andy Byerly to the broadcast. Andy, it's great to talk with you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's good to be on.
A big jump, I'd have to say, from the IMCA Modifieds to the 305 Sprint Cars. But in looking at your resume, you've been around racing since you were 7.5 years old in the quarter midgets. What got you started in auto racing?
The first time I ever even witnessed a race was in Tampa, Florida. My dad just asked me one day, he said, do you want to go see a go-kart race? And I'm like, sure. And it was, I watched it, and he's like, do you want to do it? And I'm like, yeah, for sure. And he never raced himself, but he always had an interest in it. So my dad started me in it.
And from there, it has just grown, and you've become the first female to make some nice accomplishments throughout your year, including picking up a heat race win and a 14th place in the indoor race in Cedar Lakes with the midgets, and the first female to compete in both the Canadian and North American modified tour for the IMCA Modified. So what's it been like as a female in a predominantly male-oriented sport since you were a youngster, and how much has times changed to where from the time they were boys to now they're men that the guys have accepted you as a top flight race car driver?
That's a good question. When I first started so my first race car was a quarter midget, there were definitely a few quarrels to begin with, and it was a hard adjustment at the time, but I played hockey at the same time, so I guess I was kind of always around, you know, being the only girl and stuff. But I mean, I just showed up, and, you know, you have to just be who you are, and if they don't accept you, that's their problem. And, I mean, there was nothing, I mean, like I said, there were a few fights and stuff, but it was never because of driving. It's just because younger boys didn't understand, you know, they had never raced with a girl before on. Well, then when you beat them, they have nothing to say. And then as I've gotten older, you definitely do get more respect. But there's always going to be men and women who, you know, no matter what sex you are, they're going to, you know, look at you or not like you. So you just get used to it, like I said. And I guess with Danica coming into NASCAR, there's definitely been more acceptance. I guess men are more open-minded to it. But no matter what or who you are, what your name is, you have to earn your keep. So, I mean, it's great. It's hard. It's always hard. But that challenge is there, and it's always going to be there. So you just get used to it, and it's not even a big deal at all.
How did you accept that challenge when you were younger outside of, as you mentioned just a moment ago, beating the boys on the track and getting the wins in the championships? But how did you accept that as a motivating factor in do you see yourself now any different than you were back in your early days of quarter midget racing in Florida as a driver and as a person?
At first, it was hard. You know, I guess as a motivating factor, it didn't really happen for me until I won. You just don't get that respect until you win or until you do something that makes them realize, you know, what you're capable of. And I mean, so when I finally got a quarter midget win, and you see the look on their face, you know, that they're like, wow, you know, she can do it too, you know. And that's the first motivating moment where they're like, okay, you know, now I can step up my game. Now we can do this. And then, but when it comes down to it, just like it is now, you just put a helmet on, and when you stand outside the car, nobody knows what gender you are. You know, everybody's got the helmet on the same. It's really isn't defined about, you know, whether you're female or male. But now I guess I definitely deal with it better. I just show up to the track and do what I got to do, and I don't think second thoughts about what anybody thinks or looks at or sees about me.
And I think you have to go back not only with Danica, but back as far as Lynn St. James and others, including Janet Guthrie, that really opened the early doors for women in motorsports. And now the IndyCar series is void of a female driver, with Simona DiSilvestro heading over to Europe to race Formula One. But you do have the presence of Sarah Fisher as a team owner. And on your list of accomplishments and goals that you like to achieve, one of them is to become the first woman to win the Indianapolis 500. So I'd like to find out how long of a dream has that been. And as you go now at the tender age of 18, how do you see yourself achieving that goal as becoming the first woman to win the Indianapolis 500?
I have to take the opportunities as I'm given them. And I definitely feel that this summer in Knoxville will be a very large stepping stone for me. With my location, you know, in North Dakota, it's very hard to pave a pathway to success, so to speak, and to get somewhere as far as the Indianapolis 500. But as long as I do well this summer at Knoxville, we're shooting for Rookie of the Year, you know, and hopefully, possibly a track championship in the 305. If I continue to gain success, you know, hopefully more doors will open, more opportunities, different cars, and somewhere along the line, an IndyCar ride or even a Formula One car ride would open up, and that's how I would get there.
Andy, tell me a little bit, and this is a two-part question, about how the opportunity came about to drive a 305 sprint car at one of the most famous sprint car tracks in the world in Knoxville. And secondly, the past two seasons, you've competed with the Wissota Modified Weekly Series back in 2012 and ran a few more IMCA Modified events in 2013, two very top-flight Series 4 IMCA Modified racing. How did racing at that high level, do you think, get you not only the visibility for this 305 ride, but also to compete at the next level, which is Knoxville, when it comes to sprint cars?
The IMC Modified definitely sets me up for the competitiveness of Knoxville, because, like you mentioned, that Canadian and American IMCA Tour race, there were over 120 drivers competing in it, and it's huge. So you get used to the competition, and I've driven sprint cars before. You know, I've driven for Jimmy Sills. I went to his school, drove a 410, and I've raced several other sprint car races, but I don't know. It's just you have to – the IMCA, I feel, has really paved a good path for me as far as respect and to show that, you know, I can do it. And it did. It gave me a good chance to interview and, you know, get this opportunity to drive in Knoxville. And I definitely think every hour and minute and drop of blood and sweat that was poured into everything leading up to Knoxville will prove to be successful this summer.
Who will you be racing for this year?
His name is Carl Jeffrey.
And where's Carl out of?
He's originally from Australia, but they live just a couple miles out of Knoxville now.
Oh, okay. And how did you guys get together to make this ride come about?
I know Carl contacted my dad, and then they got to talking. I guess I can't say for sure how, but I know they met up, and then actually on my way down to my first semester of college, we drove down on the way to school, and I met Carl, and I saw the cars, you know, and we talked, and he's like, well, would you be interested in driving this? And I'm like, yes, you know, without a doubt. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And I know there were other drivers that he was considering, so it's awesome that I got picked to drive the car, and I know he won't regret his decision.
Why do I have a feeling there I could just picture you looking at the car when he asked you to drive it and the eyes just being wide open like a kid on Christmas Day unwrapping that present you wanted to get from Santa Claus? It's like, yes, this is it.
That's a good description. I've definitely been waiting my entire life for an opportunity like this.
The learning curve, going from a full body lower to the car ground IMCA modified with a wider, I believe, almost as wide wheelbase, maybe a little bit wider than a sprint car, going to the upright sprint cars. Where do you think the learning curve is going to be? Where do you think you're going to be able to adapt right away? And what do you think is going to be the biggest challenge you're going to face in racing weekly at Knoxville?
I think the learning curve is definitely going to be prominent when I first get in the car. Based on the fact that, you know, you're going from a four-bar suspension in the modified to, like you said, the lower big right rear of a sprint car. And I definitely think the biggest challenge is going to be forcing myself to just keep my foot in it, you know, because in a modified, you're constantly like on and off the gas, and you have to roll it onto the right rear, and then you have to set it up in the corner, and then you have to make sure it stays on the bar. So it's a lot more work that goes into each corner and every turn and every lap. Whereas with the sprint car, it's going to be reteaching myself to just hold it to the floor and turn instead of all that other work and mess that went into it in the modified. And I know the learning curve will come around with the help of Carl. He's a great guy. He's very, very, very experienced, and he's very good at what he does. And I know that we'll be on the podium in no time.
And obviously the speed is going to be a big challenge as well from the IMCAs to the sprint cars. As a driver, can you honestly sense when you go from one level of racing to the next, can you sense just how much the speed gets faster, or does it all become one and the same as you try to slow down the event so you can, in your mind, know what you want to do, where you want the car to go, and make that happen?
The first time you get into a different car, you definitely notice as a driver the speed change, just how everything will either slow down or speed up, you know, that versus what car you sit in. It only takes a time or two, though, and after that, it's like riding a bike. You just get used to it. You remember, you're like, yep, I got to turn here, and I have to turn the wheel this fast, and I have to, you know, make sure my hands are placed here, and you just, and then after a while, like you said, you just slow down, you know, and you have to focus, and you have to control your breathing, and you have to control your mind, and you have to just remember, you have to slow down, you know, because most of the time, the slower you go in the cockpit, the faster you're going to go on the track, because everything's controlled.
Well,
that's about it.
Well, Andy, we want to thank you so much for taking time out of your college schedule here. She's majoring in chemistry, carrying a 4.0 grade point average at the moment. And we appreciate everything. And we want to wish you and the team all the best of luck for a safe and successful rookie campaign in the 305 sprint cars at the Knoxville Raceway.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was such a pleasure.
Sure thing. Andy Byerly joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break and be back with more of our show right after this.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa, is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Well, we're still in limbo as to whether or not racing season will actually get underway this March, let alone this season, the way Mother Nature is having her way here in central Pennsylvania. But one guy who is anxious to get the season going here in Pennsylvania, but already has started his season down in Florida, is the new pilot for the Mike Heffner Racing Team, and we bring in Greg Hodnett. Greg, welcome back to the show. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Sure thing. Before we get into talking about your racing down in Florida, I do have to ask, you're a full-time driver, so with all this downtime, two things. One, does it give you a little more time to work and tweak on the car? And second of all, does it give you time to knock off some of the honey-do list projects that Sherry has for you to do?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, obviously, we spend a lot of time during the winter trying to get things organized and prepared for not only Florida, but for the rest of the season. So we had a pretty good handle on before we ever left. So we came back. We know we have some issues that we found pretty much in Florida that we have to work on, so we were kind of tweaking on some things to cure a few of those, again, issues. So, I mean, there's stuff that we're kind of tweaking on. The big stuff's probably done. This week we took time to get the truck and the trailer serviced, and then next week we're going to have to, if we get to race, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't take long to maintenance the car now that we have a couple of them, together, and then so basically, we'll take next week, and actually, we have to fix our door on the trailer, so we kind of got to take it apart and get it straight and reinforce it and put it all back together within a couple of days. I mean, there's things like that that we have to do that, when it's a little bit of downtime, it kind of makes that a little bit easier to do when you're not racing every day. But obviously, being a full-time race car driver, I'd rather race than not any day of the week.
So far, Greg, you guys have been racing down in Florida before you came back here. You have a new crew chief in Ryan Hand, who came over from the Zemco team. What's the season been like so far, and what are some of the things you guys found that you have to work on that you can tell us about as we get ready to eventually race here in central Pennsylvania?
So far, it's actually going okay. I mean, obviously, we wanted to have a better showing in Florida. We struggled a bit, to be honest. We were, between a 5th and 15th place car, pretty much not really in contention winning wise. We had decent times and decent on the speed charts a couple times, but overall consistently we just weren't fast enough, so we've got to work on that. So we got to do a few things, tweak a few things on our suspension and our car program, and hopefully we can get some things figured out and get us more consistent once we start racing around here. Racing here is a little bit different than racing down there. It's just, I don't know how to explain it. Our straightaway corner ratio is a lot different than down there. Most places in the country, that's why guys kind of struggle here when they usually run good everywhere. So just how they struggle here, we struggle down there at times. And, unfortunately, nobody from the Northeast really had a very good showing down in Florida, to be quite honest with you. But we obviously want to do better, and we realize we have some issues that we have to work on, and we're going to try to do that. And I've been tweaking on that since we've been back, and hopefully we figured a few things out. But, again, because it's just a different kind of racing, it's hard to compare it down there to home. So we're going to race here for a couple times and see what we have. and then continue to make changes or go back the other way. I don't know yet.
And what is the plan for the team this year for your weekly schedule?
Right now, I'd say Friday nights. I mean, obviously, if we're around, we're going to run Friday nights, probably at the Grove, and Saturday nights, probably mostly at Port, and hit bigger shows, maybe midweek shows, kind of do a little bit of probably more traveling than I've done in the last few years. Mike really wants to race, and he's willing to, you know, go to midweek shows and like a Sunday show or Wednesday and that kind of stuff, so we can go out and come back. And that's kind of pretty much just play it by ear, to be honest with you. If things are going well and we have a have time and have the personnel to be able to do it, that's going to be our biggest obstacle, is it's just Ryan and myself full-time, pretty much, and that leaves us a little on the short side of having enough personnel to go on trips and to do a few things that you know, you'd like to do. You just have to be prepared, you know, I guess from a team standpoint, as far as having support from just people and personnel to be able to do it as much as anything. So that's kind of what we're looking at now, just trying to go when and wherever we can, as much as we can, and kind of go from there.
So you're not racing for points then in and around Central Pennsylvania this year?
No, I don't think so. I mean, unless something really goofy happens where we might be running really well at the Grove or something, we might try to make an effort towards it, but I wouldn't really count on it, to be honest with you.
We had a pretty good run last year, just 5 points away from winning the title with a torrid battle there at the end of the season with Fred Raymer. And of course, you broke your hand last year as well. Two-part question. Any effects lingering from the broken hand from last year? And what was that like, knowing that Fred was retiring, to be battling with him for the track championship at Williams Grove?
Well, as far as the hand goes, no, it's fine, and there's no residual effects from that. And, you know, obviously we just want to win. It doesn't really matter who we were competing against or what the circumstances are. You know, my job is to try to do the best job I can for my sponsors and the owner. And, you know, unfortunately, we came up a little bit short. But for where we were and how we had to kind of battle through obstacles with, you know, my hand and missing some races, I thought the team did a great job of getting us back in position. And unfortunately, we had one race out of last, I don't know, probably 12 or 13, that Fred actually finished ahead of us, and that was a national open. So, you know, just what it was. We tried our best and just came up short.
Greg, when you look back on a career like a guy such as Fred Raymer, who you've known for a long time, you raced against, what do you think one of the tangibles that set Fred apart from the drivers that came up through his era and raced as long as he did?
I think his, obviously his talent, and that's first and foremost, but talent only gets you to a certain spot, and then it takes perseverance and hard work, and obviously Fred was pretty much famous for his tenacity and never give up attitude and the will to win, and that's obviously all part of it, and what made him, you know, what he was and as successful as he was.
You had 7 wins last year, including the night before the Tuscarora 50. By your standards, is that a substandard year or just a bit of circumstances, even going back to the suffering the broken hand? How would you rate last year overall?
I think we were a little disappointed coming off of whatever, a 16-win season the year before. It was a little disappointing, but we also took into consideration that, you know, when we had 16 wins, we also ran, I don't know, I think 89 races, where last year, because of my hand, we didn't go to Florida. We didn't race all the races by any stretch of imagination. We only had 63 races, so our winning percentage was still you know, respectable 10%, you know, which means if you run 100 races, you win 10. If you run 50, you win 5. So, I mean, it's just, I like to look at things a little differently than most, not as pure numbers, but kind of like a batting average. You almost got to look at, if you have 5 home runs, you only get a bat 5 times, you're doing pretty good. So it kind of depends on how you want to look at it. In one way, it was a little disappointing because I thought we'd be more competitive more consistently. But with the change in the tires, we ended up having a few issues that I don't know that we ever really got resolved as far as for handling issues and the way I was driving issues. So, you know, with that being said, we just were a little off, and it kind of showed up by the fact that we just weren't as consistent as we were the year before.
And even looking back to last year, October of last year, you get named as the replacement driver with Mike after they parted ways with Lance Lewis. And that team last year only won 7 events in 97 shows. What was it like to replace a guy like Lance after just 1 year? And what made that opportunity, when did it become available? What made it something that you wanted to agree to go run with Mike?
Well, Mike approached me after he and Lance had decided not to continue. And there were, I don't know that Lance's, obviously his talent is not what the problem, according to Mike, wasn't really the big issue. It was other things involved in their whole team and the way they did things and went about things or whatever. So I expressed to him when he approached me, I'm like, look, Lance is fine. I mean, are you sure you don't have another problem? Because Lance can drive. There's no doubt about it. He can drive. And what's going to make it any different for me? Because I think Lance is a good driver, and I think I'm an okay driver. And I don't know that you're not doing anything but a lateral move at best. So I'm not sure what you're looking for. And he explained a few things, and it really had nothing to do with the whole it didn't seem to be have that much to do with, I mean, obviously it has to do with performance, but he felt that there was some things missing that he was looking for, and he thought I could bring to the table. So that's why the opportunity came around. And you know, when he approached me, I talked to him several times about trying to work something out to where we could do it, because I think he has nice stuff and he's a good owner and wants to win, and I have to win, obviously, or I can't make a living. So it just seems to be the circumstances were right, and we worked things out to be able to make it happen.
Any other opportunities that were on the table presented to you?
Yeah, there were a few. I mean, I talked to a couple different people, a couple more traveling than I really wanted to do, some based here, some not, and it just worked out to where I think this particular Mike and his team and his philosophy kind of worked, I think, more to what I was looking for, and I think what I do is more what he was looking for, so I think it kind of worked out to where we could really make things happen and gel and try to work, and definitely if everybody's pulling the same direction, it's definitely helpful from organizing a team anyway.
Expectations for you and Ryan for this season?
Well, obviously we have to try to win races. That's the whole point of doing this. You know, I'm just because we struggled in Florida, I'm not going to quit. And, you know, Mike's not going to fire me, but we know we have to perform. That's what we get paid to do. And that's, again, as a professional race car driver, this is the only thing I do. I have to do that. So obviously we have to get to a point where we're consistently running well. And if we can do that, you know, wins will come. But the biggest thing, get competitive, try to be fast every day. And if we can do that, then I think, it'll all work out. We just got to get to that point.
Well, it sounds like you guys definitely have some work cut out for you. And as you mentioned, just you and Ryan right now is full-time guys. So hopefully there'll be some guys out there that'll hear the podcast, might want to step up and help out you guys and the Mike Heffner Racing team. Greg, as always, we thank you for your time. Appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing you here very shortly. Hopefully the weather will cooperate at some point here in March, if not in April, and we'll finally get to racing here in the sprint car capital of the world.
Yeah, hopefully it's sooner than later, Sean.
All right, Greg Hodnett joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break and come back with more right after this. Just in time for spring, motorsports publisher Coastal 181 will deliver another great open-wheel book titled The People's Champ, A Racing Life. This autobiography of USAC Triple Crown champion Dave Darlin looks at his racing career from quarter midgets to sprint cars. The People's Champ is sure to be a hit with open-wheel fans about one of the sport's true class acts. To learn more, visit Coastal181.com or call them toll-free at 877-907-8181. Coastal 181, reading for racers. Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show. Special thanks to our guests, Andy Byerly and Greg Hodnett, for joining us on this week's edition of the Sprint Car Show. We'll have another broadcast for you coming up on Tuesday, March the 11th. And if you haven't heard by now, a great gesture by Kerry Mattson after winning the Cricky Boys Shootout in Bunbury, Western Australia last week. He donated the entire $20,000 on behalf of Jeff Gordon's Kick It for Cancer Research to the local children's hospital there in Western Australia. We will have Shane Cricky and Kerry Mattson on the show next week, as well as the voice and public relations director for the NCRA Sprint Cars, Warren Hardy. That's all coming up next Tuesday, March 11th, right here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. And also any news and notes from Central Pennsylvania if and when we get the racing season underway. And Silver Dollar Speedway opens their weekend on Friday night, and we'll see about talking with the winner of that race on Tuesday as well. So join us again next Tuesday for another edition of the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Sean Wood. The Sprint Car Show has been brought to you by Coastal181.com, reading for racers, and by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.